Coming up today on the Shelley Irwin Show podcast, WIMCAT is open for enrollment in the Adult Career Training Program. We get the details. Ice Guru Events is hosting a silent disco this summer in Rosa Park Circle. New airline disability training requirements are taking effect. We talk about how that affects paralyzed veterans. Manitou Films and Keith Patterson present Frontier to Freedom. The ASCO warns Medicaid work requirements could disrupt cancer treatment. And we talk to the host of Discover Montcalm.
When you first began, obviously there was a need and the community came together?
Absolutely. Yeah, there was a need to converge like education and industry about 20 years ago. So we were founded under the premise of really providing social and economic progress. I'm sorry, providing a culture of opportunity for people to find social and economic progress in their lives and in community. So we are now in our 21st year, just recently celebrated a fantastic milestone.
Wonderful. Where are you located?
We are located on the west side, right on 1st and Seward. We're connected to Bridge Street Market.
How important is it we study arts and technology these days?
Yeah. The way I think about it is ascending technology is really shifting how we learn and how we work and, frankly, like how we are in relationship with each other. There's been a mass resetting of simply how we are as a society, right? So like middle class career pathways are vulnerable or they're gone. We're seeing billions of new investments in artificial intelligence. And that's projected to have like internet level impact on society. So the way we think about it is we really want to invite families, specifically folks who've been underrepresented in technology and in the arts, to really be a part of designing and contributing to this revolution. And the arts education piece is really about helping young people specifically develop creative confidence. And that will translate in whatever it is that young people want to do next.
Wonderful. Let's zone in on how you are making this happen, specifically helping Kent County adults move into new careers through this tuition-free adult career training program. What's this about?
Yeah, at a high level, I mean, Greater Grand Rapids is thriving economically. We're one of the fastest growing economies, one of the best places to live, all the good things. And we have a duty and an obligation to ensure that like everyone has access to that growth. So it's tuition-free adult career training, and we have three career pathways. One is in pharmacy technician, which is very much in demand, where folks can do retail, long-term care, hospital, work for insurance companies. There's a lot of versatility inside of pharmacy tech. And then we are also home to the region's only tuition-free cybersecurity pathways. And there's two. One is in cloud security engineering, and the other one is in governance, risk, and compliance, where we're really supporting folks who've been underrepresented in tech. To be a part of protecting and guarding our systems.
So, and I'm stealing from your notes here, combined practical skills, certifications, and career guidance, you, as WIMCAT, create clear pathways to stable, well-paying jobs in West Michigan.
Yeah, absolutely. So we just graduated our fourth cohort last week. My apologies. We just graduated our fourth cybersecurity cohort in pharmacy tech cohort.
Time flies when you're having fun.
I know, right? I know. And as of right now, I mean, we're seeing about within 6 months of graduation, we're seeing about 2/3 of our graduates land employment or pursue a 2 or 4 year degree, which is pretty meaningful. Early returns say that the average wage is about $34 an hour, which is considered a thriving wage here in Greater Grand Rapids. So well above any benefits cliff threshold, well above any ALICE metrics. So, yeah, the intent here is like holistic family thriving.
Yes. Taking this apart, here we are almost end of June. Now, if one is interested in applying, is this where we start?
Absolutely. Great question. And it's a very simple process. So step one is to visit WIMCAT's website, WIMCAT.org, WMCAT, and complete an enrollment form. Our preference is that is done by July 9. From there, one would need to take a reading and math assessment, not to screen anyone out, but it's a pretty accelerated course. So we want to ensure that folks feel ready and prepared for that. And then the final step is really a conversation/interview with our staff, which takes place early August. So if folks are interested, recommend visiting our website ASAP, specifically in cybersecurity, and we can get that process rolling.
And, Jamon, this is such that is there, I mean, we're talking tuition free.
Absolutely, tuition free. So there's no out-of-pocket financial costs, no student loans to navigate. And we say tuition free because folks still pay a really high mental, emotional, and logistical cost. Right, as folks are working part-time or full-time, often head of household, often navigating so many different things to make this work. We want to ensure that the financial piece isn't the barrier to an in-demand career and a thriving family wage.
Nice. And yet, put some stake in the game. An investment often will pay off, and for sure,
absolutely,
with this opportunity. WMCAD, open for enrollment. The Adult Career Training Program, pharmacy technician, cybersecurity, with a couple under its head title. In general, say I'm accepted, when do you start and when do you end?
Yeah, so our program tends to mirror the public school year. So we start September, specifically September 21, and our cybersecurity students will graduate in July. The pharmacy tech students a little bit earlier, they'll graduate in June. So in less than a year, we can say for everyone, less than a year.
And in general, are your professors, teachers, local?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So in pharmacy, our instructor is local, works for Corewell Health, which is a pretty major pharmacy tech partner that we have. And as far as cybersecurity, we do have a third-party instructional partner. However, the instructors will be local.
Nice. Mm-hmm. What else happens this summer at WNCAP?
Yeah. This summer is pretty fun. So we are partnering with Grand Rapids Public Schools to support their summer school. Yes. With middle school students. So any given day, any given morning, there's 6th, 7th, and 8th graders making a lot of noise and doing a lot of creative things at WMCAT. We also have what we call a summer intensive, which is for incoming 7th grade through 9th graders to really explore arts and tech and creativity. And that will begin mid-July. And then beyond that, we are actively recruiting for all of our adult career training in adult workforce development programs.
Yep. Be interesting, and I'm sure you have in the files, but 21 years old, where are those first graduates, you know?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And that's one of the great parts of having being a part of a community and watching an organization grow. We often hear from our alumni their success stories, be it employment success stories, mm-hmm. and I would say even things that are really difficult to measure in a grant report, things like the ways in which it impacts families, in generations, as children are watching their parents pursue their own possibility. That's inspiring to the kids as well. Anecdotally, like we have, for example, pharmacy technician supervisors at Corewell Health that now lead the instructor that taught them, right? So like we have the benefit of seeing 20 plus years of growth and seeing where families are today.
What do you need from the community?
Great question. Yeah, so of course we are recruiting right now for adult career training. So we would love for the community, specifically if this is for you, we would love for you to visit our website and begin the enrollment process. If you don't feel like it's for you, however, you might know someone that it's for. Again, visit the website. We are enrolling right now. And as always, because we are tuition free, it is important that it remains that way. So we are always seeking gifts and contributions to ensure that our programs remain tuition-free for families in the future.
Let's hope you peek your head into every classroom and let them know that you are on the grounds and supportive. Mm-hmm. One more time, best website, Jamon Alexander, President and CEO of WMCAT.
WMCAT.org. That's WMCAT.org.
May the applications overflow. Thanks for the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Get ready for a summer series, literally a silent disco summer 2026 series, starting, well, as early as today. Let's catch up with you, Jessica Armock, on behalf of Guys Ice Guru Events. Oh my gosh, are we ready? Because it's officially summer. Good morning to you, Jessica.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome. Yes, talking about, it looks like, 7 nights of high-energy outdoor dancing at Rosa Park Circle. Why is Ice Guru Events involved, interested, and running the ship here?
Yeah, so we have been running silent discos for a while now. We've been kind of sprinkling them in throughout the year. And we heard from the community that they loved them. And one of the biggest things was they wanted something this summer. It's beautiful, especially out here in West Michigan. So we decided to take advantage of that and find 7 beautiful days between today and October 1st to have silent discos in one of the coolest places, Rosa Park Circle.
All right. How does silent disco work?
Yes, it sounds very weird, I know, but basically a silent disco is a headset that is connected to our DJ. We have 3 different channels that you can switch from with 3 different styles of music. So basically you put the headphones on, you choose a channel that you vibe with, and you just dance and have a great night.
That is called a visual, as they say. Why are we into silent disco? Put your psychological hat on. Why not just play Donna Summer all night long and just dance to her?
Yeah, it's definitely a really unique experience, right? We're used to the go somewhere, there's a bunch of loud stereos and music, people are dancing in a big crowd, right? This is like your own world, right? You put your headphones on and you're listening to a channel and you're in your own vibe, right? You feel a little bit more comfortable. You feel a little bit more confident because you're, you know, in your headphones. You feel like you're just you listening to music, right? And then you turn and your friends next to you or strangers next to you, and you see them with, you know, they're dancing and they have a green color on their headphones, right? And you're on red and you're like, what's going on over there? Like, what are they listening to on green, right? And you change the channel, and next thing you know, you're, like, connected with them, right? You're like, oh, my God, the Cupid Shuffle's on. I love the Cupid Shuffle. And then you're all dancing and doing the Cupid Shuffle. So it's a different experience because it's like you can be alone and listen to the music in your headphone and dance and feel confident, but you also can, like, connect to people in a different way.
Connection is key. All right. So we talk 7 nights. Events looks like running a lot of time, a lot of exercise from 6 to 10 p.m. at Rosa Park Circle. Are these consistently tonight you kick off, correct?
Yes. So tonight at 6 p.m. at Rosa Park Circle is our first headsets. And then going forward, it's going to be every other Thursday until October 1st. So we wanted to try to get as many dates in there as possible, but we also want to give people a break. Not everybody can come out on a Thursday night, right? So we decided to pick a couple dates that worked and see what goes from there.
Yes. Is this a rental opportunity?
Yes. So it is $10 to rent the headsets. We just ask you bring a state ID. That way we know who's renting what. And then we also are doing this really awesome deal where the first 25 people get a free headset. This is our way to bring the community together, bring people out. I mean, free, right? What more do you love than that, coming out to a free event? So if you're there at 6 o'clock, first 25 are free. So
I feel sorry for the 26th, but not everybody can win a prize, as they say. Ice Guru Events presenting Bringing the Party to the Heart of Downtown Grand Rapids, early as tonight, the Silent Disco Summer 2026 series. And, I introduce you as Ice Guru Events. Will there be ice on site, or is this just kind of what you've exploded into on behalf of Randy and the group?
Yes. So, no ice on site. This is completely summer fun dancing music. You know, we love doing all of our ice stuff, but I think this is a great opportunity to show off a couple of other things that we do. I mean, people just don't know what a silent disco is. They don't know that places like Grand Rapids do it. And now a lot of people say, like, oh, yeah, I've done it on a cruise or something like that, right? We're bringing it local, and we are, you know, introducing something new and fun to the community.
Well, I'm going to go out with little Donna Summer because that was my generation, little heaven knows, maybe one of the choices. If not, it's disco. All right, details one more time. How do I find out more information about what you have to offer?
Yeah, so again, tonight, Rosa Park Circle, 6 to 10 p.m. First 25 are free, otherwise it's just $10. If you look up our Facebook page at Ice Guru Events, it has all the dates and all the info. So if you can't make it tonight, we hope to see you on one of the other dates.
Great. Thanks to you, Jessica Harmock, on behalf of Ice Guru Events and the Silent Disco Series. Yay! This is an important conversation we are to have. 2 guests with us, Tom Wheaton, U.S. Navy veteran and Paralyzed Veterans of America national treasure with us. Good morning to you, Tom.
Good morning.
Maria Towne, American Association of People with Disabilities, President and CEO. Thank you to you, Maria.
Thank you for having me.
Here we are. Let's talk about this topic, that new airline disability training requirements take effect. Paralyzed Veterans of America does call for full implementation after decades of injuries, damaged wheelchairs, and preventable deaths. I'm going into this conversation somewhat negatively, but I know there's a silver lining. Let's set up our conversation. I'll begin with you, Tom.
Okay.
Talk to me a little bit about your side of the story and why this conversation is needed. Airline staff aren't prepared to assist passengers with mobility disabilities?
Correct. And there's so many dangers involved. You know, the boarding process requires a transfer from the wheelchair to a skinny aisle chair. And if not careful, there's a risk of being dropped. That's exactly what happened to a very close friend of mine. He's a Marine Corps veteran, quadriplegic, and he was harshly dropped by untrained handlers, and he hit the floor hard. After surgeries, he has no tailbone. So he endured months of bed rest, and whatever independence he previously had was ripped away from him that day. 7 years later, he still hasn't fully recovered, and that's just inhumane.
Talk to me on your side of the story, if you would, Maria. I know the potential dangers passengers do face with mobility disabilities during boarding and deplaning that able-bodied take for granted.
Yes, and it's not just boarding and deplaning. It's also the damage to the devices that we rely on, like wheelchairs and scooters. Tens of thousands of wheelchairs and scooters are damaged or broken by airlines every year, leaving people with disabilities stranded and unable to move independently. That was certainly true for me a few months ago when an airline broke my mobility scooter when I was traveling for work. I was left stranded. I was forced to walk, which is very difficult for me to do, and I couldn't fully participate in my work conference, the entire point of me traveling. It took weeks for my scooter to be fixed, and I got it back, and I'm okay. But that's not the case for many people with disabilities who have to wait months and months to get their chairs repaired or replaced. And these long waits have very negative consequences on our health and on our lives. That was the case for Ingracia Figueroa, a disability advocate whose wheelchair was damaged during air travel. The airline did not provide Ingracia with an appropriate supportive replacement chair, and she was stuck, literally, in an improper-fitting chair for weeks while she was fighting with the airline to get her custom wheelchair fixed. Being in that improper-fitting wheelchair caused her to get pressure sores, which ultimately caused her death.
Thanks for that. Again, reality check. Let me ask about the new DOT training requirements and what that means for airlines and travelers. Talk to me more. I'll go back to you, Tom Wheaton.
Sure. Well, you know, air travel is a basic civil right. Now, 40 years after the Air Carrier Access Act was signed, it remains unsafe and even deadly for passengers with mobility disabilities. So these airlines need to ensure that their employees understand how to safely assist passengers. And this is way more than mere compliance. This is about dignity, respect, safety, and trust.
Talk to me why now is the time for airlines to get it right, the human consequences of noncompliance. Obviously, getting your side of the story here, Maria.
Airline staff who assist people with disabilities and who handle our devices will be required to go through hands-on training and be assessed on device handling competency. So with this, people with disabilities should be able to fly better, more safely, and with more dignity, and with confidence that our devices will not be damaged during transit. But this will only be the case if the U.S. Department of Transportation fully enforces these new training requirements and every airline in the country implements them thoroughly.
Tom, what's an action item on behalf of course, Paralyzed Veterans of America?
Yeah, we should go to pva.org/airtravel, and there people can learn about their rights. They can sign our petition and get more in depth as to what our advocacy events are in air travel.
And again, your company, if you want to expand AAPD, your way to find out more about you as well, Maria?
please go to AAPD.com. We're a national cross-disability civil rights organization, and we're proud to be with PVA, an organization that we've partnered with for decades, fighting for the rights of people with disabilities.
All right, work to do to make sure that safe accommodations for air travelers with disabilities using wheelchairs is appropriate. Thank you both, Tom Wheaton and Maria Town, for your service. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Here we go. Mark your calendar for July 2nd on your WGVU PBS station. We'll get into the details of time, but now we know why, because Manitou Films and Keith Anderson presents Frontier to Freedom. It's a documentary unearthing the overlooked history of our great state of Michigan. Yep, Evolution Traced. I'll let you finish the story because you are in the house, Keith Patterson. I attended the screening. Boy, are we in for a treat here. Good morning.
Morning, Shelley. Thanks for having me.
When did the idea of Frontier to Freedom come into your mind?
You know, it wasn't that long ago. I came up with the idea last March because I knew that the United States semi-quincentennial was coming up. And I really thought about if I wanted to make a documentary to celebrate America 250, what would that look like? And at the time, I realized I had no idea what Michigan's involvement in the American Revolution was. And the more I learned, the idea just kind of coalesced and assembled some really great partners, including WGVU Public Media, which is my presenting station for PBS. And here we are.
There you are. And Manitou Films, want to brag on yourself a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Well, Manitou Films is my company. We're a film and television production company located here in Grand Rapids. And for the last 4 years, we've been exclusively making long-form documentaries about Michigan history.
Yes. Has Michigan's history been overlooked?
You know, I don't know if it's been overlooked. Certainly, it's really important to the people that live here. But, you know, we're going to be airing Frontier to Freedom statewide on PBS starting this 4th of July weekend. And then it's going to air nationally through American Public Television on PBS starting this fall. So it's going to reach a much wider audience. And I should say, we believe it's the most complete historical record of the history of Michigan from 1600 to 1837, when we became a state, that's ever been put on film. So we're just really excited to share it with audiences. We've had a limited theatrical release that started June 5th that's going through this fall. But the best way for your audience to catch it is right here on WGVU, July 2nd at 9 p.m.
9 p.m., there you are. Tell me about some of your research with this wonderful opportunity. Where do you even start? Who'd you talk to?
Yeah, that's another great question. I did a lot of my own research to begin with, but as I did my casting, we worked with 30 historical experts around the state, including professors from the University of Michigan, Western Michigan University, Michigan State University, Mackinac State Historic Parks, archaeologists, interpreters, just really big heavy hitters in Michigan history. And I learned a lot of the story from my interviewees.
Yes. How'd you get the, well, I guess I'll call them pictures that we see?
Yes, the archival imagery. Yes. We have 900 archival images in the film. And my archival producer, Kevin Foley, he just did a fantastic job. We also had a team of interns from Grand Valley State University History Department, and we worked really closely with them, taught them how to search for things, and we've been historically fact-checked by the University of Michigan and others. And I should also say, you know, the Native American story is a huge part of this, and working with the Little Traverse Band of Odawa Indians and Wyandotte Nation was essential.
Any specific zoning in on West Michigan?
You know, West Michigan is definitely a part of the story. I would say during this time period from 1600 to 1837, the big areas that we cover are around the forts. So Fort Michilimackinac, Fort St. Joseph, which is in Niles, which is in southwest Michigan, and also Fort Pontchartrain, which became Fort Detroit.
Yes. So a bit of a tease as a Michigan lesson. You mentioned indigenous peoples, 1600 to its emergence as what we were the 26th state in 1837?
That's correct, yeah. And going back to the indigenous story, you know, it wouldn't be possible to tell the story of Michigan without the Native American story. The European population of Michigan did not exceed the European population until the 1830s. So if you're looking at around the American Revolution, there were probably somewhere around 15,000 Native Americans here and only hundreds of Europeans. So, you know, when you look at maps from that era and say, like, this was French or this was British, you know, European monarchs could draw lines on a map, but the, you know, the truth on the ground of who was really in charge is they were kind of here at the pleasure of the Native American tribes.
This film, again, described as exploring the region's history on the American frontier, the complex forces that shape Michigan's path to statehood. What's an example of a complex force?
Oh, sure. I mean, I should mention that we do have a big emphasis on the American Revolution on the frontier because this is an America 250 piece. And I think one of the things that I learned that's really fascinating that comes through in the film is how the different political allyships changed over time. I mean, it started as, you know, under New France being a French colony. They were allied with our local native tribes, the Odawa, the Ojibwe, the Potawatomi, the Wyandot. But then over time, you know, we get to the French Indian War, they were allied with the French. And then just 20 years later, during the American Revolution, they switched sides and fought with the British against the Americans. So it's really interesting to see what each, political organization's motivations were at the time. And I think we did a really good job of presenting each side, you know, without bias and really giving each individual a lot of screen time to kind of tell it from their side of the story.
Again, I know you've been giving screen time to lucky audiences. How long is the full length?
The film is 2 hours long. We just did a 45-minute screening at the Gerald R. Ford Presidential Museum. You were there.
It was wonderful.
Yeah, it was just a true honor to play it there. And our theatrical version is 2 hours, and the PBS version is 2 hours.
What other questions do you get asked regarding this from, you know, the people who have seen your work or want to know more about Michigan history?
Yeah, I think one interesting thing that people don't know is there was actually American military action in the state of Michigan during the American Revolution, or what we call Michigan today. You know, Fort Detroit served kind of as like a staging place that they would supply the Native American tribes to conduct raids around the American frontier. There was a big military campaign that was launched from Fort Michilimackinac that went all the way to St. Louis to attack the Spanish down there. And then as a result of that, there were two raids that came up from St. Louis to attack Fort St. Joseph in Niles during the Revolution in 1780 and 1781.
Again, producer Keith Patterson with us, Manitou Films presenting Frontier to Freedom. You'll see this on your WGVU channel July 2nd. That's 9 o'clock. I'll give you more details as we look toward our closing. Are you looking to take this to schools? What would be the next step? I mean, you want to focus. I mean, it's important to focus on next week and more, but what's the ultimate dream?
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to be pursuing educational distribution. We have a number of partners that are going to be helping us do that. You know, it's also going to be on Amazon Prime Video this fall. And as I mentioned, national distribution on PBS through American Public Television.
Yes. How does it feel to, I mean, when did you first start thinking this? How many years has this been?
You know, it's been about 15 months. So it's been a huge, tight turnaround. With this date of July 4th, 2026 looming the whole time. But we just had a fantastic team of people. And it's really been, you know, just a great statewide community effort from a lot of different people to make this happen.
Was this your dream to become a filmmaker, Keith?
It's always been my dream since I was about 15 or 16 years old. And, you know, the way that I got into it was actually a course that I took at Forest Hill Central High School, and a teacher that I had there by the name of Ann Layton, and she launched hundreds of careers in media.
Yes, the importance of having that teacher who says you can do it, and examples important as well. What else would you like to share, Keith, as we close?
Yeah, I just think it's really important for people to celebrate America 250, regardless of political affiliation or, anything like that. I think, we can acknowledge some of the things that happened in our past, like war, and some of the more challenging things in our past. But it's important to celebrate because America is exceptional. And the Declaration of Independence, which is what we're celebrating, and the U.S. Constitution was really life-changing for billions of people around the world, whether you're in America or not.
Yes. And putting the spotlight on Michigan makes it even sweeter to be reminded of history and yet live for today. Details one more time on how to see Frontier to Freedom, Keith.
Yeah, the best way for your audience to watch the film is this July 2nd on WGVU Public Media at 9 p.m. or on the PBS app.
Popcorn recommended?
Absolutely.
Keith Patterson, congratulations on your success with Frontier to Freedom.
Thanks, Shelley.
Next, Kiss here to discuss an important topic. Experts are warning Medicaid work requirements could disrupt cancer treatments and cost patients coverage. Those experts, on behalf of the Association for Clinical Oncology, you, Chief Medical Officer and Executive Vice President Dr. Julie Grelo. Good morning to you, Dr. Grelo.
Good morning, Shelley.
Thank you for your niche and obviously this important conversation on behalf of the American Society of Clinical Oncology. Tough yet important job you have. Let's set up our conversation, if you would, please. Lots to discuss, including what the new Medicaid work requirements and when they begin.
Well, in June, we have some new regulations issued that will take effect in January of 2027, but states are already, in some cases, starting to work toward implementing them. Basically, what they state is that you will need to prove 80 hours of work, essentially, unless you meet certain requirements, one of which is medical frailty. That would capture most cancer patients, but what's new is how you prove your quote-unquote medical frailty. So we previously in most states had some form of work requirements and different ways that you could show that you aren't able to work. But now we're going to have to go through the process every 6 months instead of every 12 months.
So the follow-up, how could these policies affect cancer patients in active treatment?
Absolutely. If a patient is in active treatment, previously you could self-attest and say, I have cancer and my treatment is making me unable to work. And that would be good. Now you're going to have to prove why you're unable to work. You're going to prove the debilitating side effects of your disease or treatment. And you're going to have your doctor's office essentially also attest to that. So it's a new requirement to get medical verification as well. Having it happen more often, twice a year, having the multiple more requirements to meet this, we're going to have patients fall out. They're not going to be able to get the paperwork in on time. Think about a poor patient undergoing chemotherapy every 6 months, having to gather this all together, meet deadlines. They're going to have gaps, and that means they're going to have delays in chemo and getting access to prescription drugs and surgery, and that could impact their survival and their chance of cure.
Why are administrative reporting requirements especially difficult for oncology patients?
Well, one part of it is just how the patient is doing when they're on treatment. Fatigue is the most common side effect of cancer treatment. You've got to focus on getting to your appointments. you know, getting through the day, getting through your treatments, and you add this burden of it's on you to submit things in a timely way, to do all the attestations, making sure things are submitted. And now we've got your medical team is also needing to report, and that burden of having that happen in a timely manner. All of this is happening in a setting of people who have so much else going on that we're really worried that this is going to impact ability to get care and impact outcomes from cancer treatment.
Again, Chief Medical Officer, Executive Vice President of the American the Association for Clinical Oncology, Dr. Julie Grelo, with us. Talk to me about what happens when cancer patients lose Medicaid coverage, even temporarily.
Well, you know, in Michigan, we know that stable and interrupted health insurance is a critical component of surviving cancer. And if a patient loses Medicaid coverage, even for a single month because of a reporting error related to work for work requirements or a paperwork delay of some kind, it can completely derail their whole cancer treatment plan. So our focus is we want patients to be able to get their treatment on time. We want them to be to expend their energy on healing, not on completing the paperwork, not on having disruptions in their care.
And the lessons that were learned from previous Medicaid work requirement programs would be?
Well, each state is now implementing this in different ways. We'll see what happens over the next 6 months to a year. But what happened in Arkansas, for example, they imposed work requirements, and roughly one in four people lost their health coverage. One in four people with cancer lost their health coverage, not because they didn't qualify for, you know, the work requirement omission, but they actually just they had administrative delays and paperwork delays. So they actually qualified to meet this frailty requirement. They qualified to not have to do their 80 hours per month of work, but it was administrative errors or problems or delays. One in four.
Thank you for, again, that reminder. So policies, what policies could protect vulnerable patients, I guess, while reducing administrative burdens, Dr. Grelo?
Well, we know we've all moved toward electronic medical records, and in order to submit a bill to Medicaid, it's all electronic now, we could use the electronic medical record data, the billing that goes to Medicaid to prove that a patient is on chemo, here's their diagnosis, all of that. It could be automated instead of having to separately pull it out of the system and the caregivers to report to the system. If we automated it into the state and they said, yes, the patient is on chemotherapy, it's proven, it's in the medical record, it would take a huge burden off. And that's what we're really trying to promote, is automating this. Use what you already have in the system and feed it in and take the paperwork burden off of both the patient and the healthcare team.
What's the best way to find out more information to carry on the conversation?
At the ASCO website, it's asco.org/Medicaid. You will find more information about Medicaid and its coverage of cancer patients in general.
All right. Keep up your great work, Dr. Julie Grelo, again, Chief Medical Officer, Executive VP, Association for Clinical Oncology, an important topic we've had. Thank you.
Thanks for helping spread the word.
Well, my next guest turned the table on me. He interviewed me, and I said yes, that he is Dwayne Weed. He's in the house. I hope you've listened to his podcast, Discover Montcalm Podcast. There's a number 200 right around the corner. So obviously we talk about that more to you, Dwayne, Michigan's video storyteller and local video marketing, overall kind of cool guy. Plus, I'm discovering Montcalm. Good morning to you, Dwayne. I'm glad that I'm turning the tables on you now.
Yes, and thank you so much. It was fun when we had a chance to talk, and, you know, I guess touche.
You wonderful. Well, you, as they say, put me at ease. I saw your behind the scenes as the success that you have made in your career and you continue making. And you made me sit and think a little bit about Montcalm. Now, obviously, we're in Kent County, but this is why I bring you in, and you're all dressed for the two of me a little bit about Dwayne Weed.
Well, I have been in the world of video production since 1984. I graduated from Ferris State College back in 1983. It was a college then. I'm old, but I'm not as old as the Institute. It became a university in 1986. Started the business in 1984, and, you know, here I am.
Here you are. And the business, are you all about storytelling with video, with marketing, and of course now in the podcast world?
Yes, did a lot of stuff for business and industry. You know, back in the day, it started with VHS tapes. We used to do thousands and thousands of VHS copies, and then that went to DVD, and then it went to the internet. And, you know, we kind of adapted as we went. And, you know, now we're website design, and then podcasting is something that we're into now. And now we're into doing content creation.
Yes. Who is we? Do you have a team, or is it all about Dwayne?
I have developed a team of people over the years. I realized early on I could not do it alone. I followed the Henry Ford principle. Surround yourself with people that know more than you in certain categories. So, you know, animation, for example, was something that I didn't do. So I brought on animators. I brought on other video producers so that we would collaborate. And a lot of times it was people that ran businesses just like mine. So I would work for them. They'd work for me. You know, I'd wear their hat. They would wear mine, and we would work together.
What is it about this business, before I get to your Discover Montcalm podcast, that keeps you fresh, that keeps you involved? Joke about your age. You know, we probably are in the same range, but there's more to do.
There is, and I recently, from 2020 to 2026, I also took on the role as an educator, teaching digital arts at the Montcalm Area Career Center, and I just retired from there. And I was deciding recently what to do, and content creation, storytelling has always been something that I have done, and now I'm kind of looking at it from the standpoint of the world's my oyster, so to speak. And now I just want to tell stories, whether I'm going back and looking at archival stuff that I've done and bringing that stuff back, going around and interviewing locals. You know, Discover.com is something that I've done locally, but I'm even opening up now a thing called Chatting Local, where it'll be where my feet are. Just came back from up north, and I did about 12 of those while I was up there, just interviewing businesses and that. So I'm kind of doing what you're doing. You know, you're talking to local people, you know, businesses. I'm taking the camera out, doing little reels of businesses as I'm going, you know, around the area, because storytelling is what I like, and I love promoting local.
All right. Again, birds of a feather, as they say. Let's zone in to Discover Montcalm, your Discover Montcalm podcast. Educate me to Montcalm, the area, and more.
Well, Montcalm is, you know, I guess, where I have been. You know, I grew up in the big metropolis of Morley. You know, that's in Mecosta County, but grew up there, met a gal in Sand Lake, and we looked and found a place in Howard City. We got married. You know, we've been married now for 39 years. Just celebrated that 39th. And, you know, we raised a family in Howard City. And I was looking at, you know, the world of podcasting. I was trying to do something and thought, you know, let's do podcasting. I like telling stories. I like promoting local. I like getting to know people. You know, very similar to what you're doing, you know, I like to dive into you know, kind of the person behind the sign. You know, we see these signs on the roads all the time, but who are the people behind the sign? How did they start the business? You know, what gets them up? What is their why?
Do you see a lot of similarities in your answers?
Yeah. You know, a lot of dedication, a lot of sweat equity, you know, a lot of, you know, hey, I had this idea and I ran with it. And it's one of those things that, you know, it's a passion. And I just love to see it. And the sad thing is, once in a while, just like in life, the business fails. You know, and I've seen that with a handful of them that I've brought on. But fortunately, most of them are succeeding.
You are approaching number 200. A, how does that feel? B, do you know who that guest will be?
Actually,
has it already been in the can?
Well, it's already in the can. And what I did is on episode 100, a good friend of mine, Kathy Murphy, came in and she interviewed me on the 100. So a good friend of mine, Mark Brewster, he has interviewed me for the 200th. So, and
Dwayne,
we're kind of
Weed 2.0.
Yes. And then from there, I just keep going.
As you should. And again, thanks for our bond. You've already released that live. So at the end, I'll obviously ask how to find out more information about your work. I get this question a lot. Is there someone you really want to interview, either in our area or beyond?
We all have a bucket list, and Bob Seger. You know, now he's not from Montcalm, you know, but, you know, Michigan-based. You know, if you ever had a bucket list person, he is that person, because I'm in music. You know, I'm a drummer. I love music, and if I could interview anybody, that would be the person. But I really like just the entrepreneur. You know, I like talking to anybody. And that's where the chatting local is the twist for me. Montcalm is one of those things that, yeah, that's where I live and I love playing there. Chatting local is letting me spread my wings, and who knows where it's going to go.
Oh, that's the dream. Again, Dwayne Reed with us, Local Video Marketing, Michigan's video storyteller. Again, DWVideo.com, and now zoning in on Discover Montcalm podcast. I remember that set of drums when I went to your place.
Yeah.
Was that a fun life for you?
You know, I tell people I get to beat things with sticks and not get arrested.
Blunt, but that covers that.
It's good therapy.
Yes. I guess looking at the future, are we going to be listening more to podcasts, and are we continuing to scroll through reels? You think that is the future versus throw away the VHS tapes?
Part of DW Video is content creation. It's also, I'm the guy that transfers all the home movies and videotapes.
Oh, you are?
And I've been doing that.
That's a business in itself.
Forever. And I'm still doing that. You know, I'm at that age that I could retire from things, but I love what I do. And my wife doesn't want me in the house.
That's the bottom line. You bet. So 39 was good, but you better prepare for 40. All right, so where do I listen to Discover Montcalm as a podcast?
DiscoverMontcalmPodcast.com. You can get all the information. We are on iHeart, Apple, and Pandora. And, you know, just go to Discover Montcalm Podcast and grab the RSS feed and put it in your favorite podcast browser.
And then what about your other venues?
Everything can be found on dwvideo.com, and that's our hub. You know, that's the parent company, and everything that I have will be there.
And kind of like my situation, if someone wants to be a guest or wants to refer, get in touch with you?
dwvideo.com has my phone number, and my email address is there. You know, that's just, and or just Google Dwayne Weed. You're going to find me.
If I'm up to Montcalm for a day, what should I do?
Oh, my goodness. You know, that's... that's a loaded one. If you have kids, there is oh my goodness, I just draw a blank here. There is
a trail I can walk. Is there a restaurant I should go to?
There's the Forager in Howard City is a great place to go. CJ's restaurant in Howard City is another. It's just a mom pa type of place.
It's gonna be the best,
And there's the White Pine Trail that goes through there. It's in the Panhandle area there, but you can go east. There's a lot.
And, just do it. Listen to your podcast to get those tips. Discover Montcalm Podcast and more under your leadership and talent, Dwayne Weed. Thank you very much. That's a wrap for this edition of the 25th day of June. Tomorrow is 6/26/2026. Does that mean anything? Are we supposed to do the lottery? Or just celebrate another day. There we go. Your inspiration for the day, according to Alice Walker, the most common way people give up their power is by thinking they don't have any. Power up. Hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Shelley Irwin.